We're on Vav Amid Aleph, 10 lines down, the second last word on the line, where it says, Iboy Lahu. The Mishnah taught us that the Rabbanan enacted that we're not to engage in commerce with pagans within 3 days of their pagan idolatrous festivals. Later on today's daf, we'll discuss the exact reason for the enactment. But in terms of what was enacted, the Mishnah simply says, for 3 days before any pagan festival, the prohibition applies. So daf today begins with the following question. And they asked, this figure the Mishnah mentions of Shloshi Yomim, that the prohibition lasts for 3 days, does it mean Hain Ve'edehen? Does that figure include the festival day itself, so that the total period lasts for 3 days, 2 days before plus the festival day itself? Odoma, or maybe Hain Beloedehen. Maybe the 3 days that our Mishnah mentions means aside from the festival itself. Accordingly, the total period would last 4 days, because certainly the festival day itself is the day on which the prohibition applies. So how do we read the Mishnah? And the Gemara tries to answer the question based on a Mishnah later on Zion Amid Beis. A Toshma, come here, the Mishnah later says the following. Rabbi Yishmael Omer, Yishmael says, he asserts that the prohibited period lasts longer than the Tana of our Mishnah said. That is, Rabbi Shmuel says, Shlosha lifneim shlosha lachreim aser. Not only do we have the 3 days before, but we also have 3 days after the festival. During that time as well, it's prohibited to engage in these different types of commerce mentioned in the Mishnah with an idolater. So the Gemara points out, Isak edaita chen ve'edehen. If the first possibility that was suggested above, that the period of 3 days is counting the festival day too, it's part of that count, well then Rabbi Shmuel's presentation here would not be readable. Rabbi Shmuel yomideyan chashiv lu meikara v'chashiv lu l'basof. Would it make any sense here that Rabbi Shmuel says 3 days before, 3 days after, and both parts of that statement are counting the festival day itself? That wouldn't make any sense. Seemingly the only way to read Rabbi Shmuel's words is if we assume he's not counting the festival itself. It is Rabbi Shmuel says, aside from the festival day itself, the rabbinic prohibition applies 3 days before and an additional 3 days after the festival. And so this would prove that when our Tana as well, discusses 3 days before, he means separate and distinct from the festival itself. So the total purity of the prohibition, according to our Mishnah, would be 4 days. The Gemara deflects this proof by saying that really it's possible that when Rabbi Shmuel mentions 3 days before, that part of his statement includes the festival day itself, so that the prohibition only really starts 2 days before the festival. Of course, he is not counting the festival day twice. Rather, when Rabbi Shmuel discusses how the prohibition extends to after the festival, really he means it extends for just 2 days after the festival. So why didn't Rabbi Shmuel then say that, okay, the prohibition continues for 2 days? Should have said, Shlosha lifneim ushtayim lacharehen. The Gemara says that it's possible Rabbi Shmuel chose to include the festival day itself when discussing the period that follows the festival. Aidi detanish shlosha lifneim, because since we use the figure of three when discussing the period that starts before the festival, Tana Nami Shlosha Lachreim. So Rabbi Shmuel preferred to be symmetrical with the first part of his statement and also use the number 3 when talking about the prohibition after the festival. But practically speaking, when he says 3 after, he means including the festival itself, so that it's only an additional 2 days after the festival. So we can't necessarily resolve the issue from the words of Rabbi Shmuel. The Gemara attempts another proof. Toshma, come in here. The Amar of Tachlifa Bar of Dimi Amar Shmuel, he will state on Zion Amid Beis the following. Yom Aleph, or Yom Rishon, the first day of the week, otherwise known as Sunday. Ledivrei Rebbe Yishmal, Liola Maser. Regarding the pagans who would observe every Sunday as an idolatrous festival on which they would worship the sun. That's why it's called Sunday. So if the Chlifa Rav Dimer Mishmuel pointed out, that according to Rabbi Yishmael, who says the prohibition period of commerce lasts for 3 days before and 3 days after, well, according to that, practically speaking, a Jew could never conduct business with members of this pagan group. Because 3 days before Sunday and 3 days after Sunday, well, that takes up all 7 days of the week. So according to Rabbi Yishmael, one could never conduct business with this group of Babylonian pagans. So the Gemara points out, V'isak edaita chen v'edehen, if the understanding of this three-day period of the rabbinic prohibition includes the festival itself, that's part of the count, well then Shmuel's teaching would not be true. If we're counting the festival itself toward the 3 days, well then actually the prohibition would only start 2 days before the festival, which would mean Friday and Shabbos, and another 2 days after, which would mean Monday and Tuesday. And so the statement that every day of the week would be encompassed by the prohibition would simply be not true. For Ha'ika Arba V'Chamisha Dishari, for Wednesday and Thursday are not part of the prohibition, according to this reading, they would be permitted. They would be outside of the scope of the rabbinic prohibition. So this teaching of Rav Tachlifa, Rav Dima, and Rav Shmuel seems to preclude this reading that means, you know, 2 days before plus the festival itself. Rather, it must be that the right reading is 3 days means 3 full days before plus the festival day itself, and therefore, according to Rabbi Shmuel, who says there's another 3 days afterwards, indeed, for these pagan idol worshippers who had a festival every Sunday, every single day of the week would be part of the prohibition. However, the Gemara responds that no, this still doesn't resolve our question. For the Gemara says, Aliba de Reb Yishmael, Lokami Boili, the Hain below Edeyan. We're not asking this question according to the opinion of Reb Yishmael, for indeed, as was just pointed out, it's clear that Reb Yishmael's understanding is that the 3 day period is separate and distinct from the festival day itself. It is the 3 day period plus the festival day. Rather, Kikami Boili, the one who asked this question says, what was my question here, according to which opinion? Aliba the Rabbanan. He asked this question according to the Rabbanan of our Mishnah, my. The question is, what do they mean? The Tan of our Mishnah said the words, Lifnei Edeyan Shalom Dekochavim Shloshi Yomim. When he spoke about a 3 day period of this rabbinic prohibition, did he mean to include even the festival day itself or not? The fact that the Tan Rabbi Shmuel meant in one way doesn't necessarily prove that the Rabbanan meant it that way as well. So the Gemara tries another proof. Amar Ravina. Ravina said, Tashma, come in here, proof from the Mishnah later on Ches Amud Aleph, which lists some examples of, you know, Roman pagan festivals. The following were examples of Roman pagan festivals. There was a festival called Kalenda, and then Sitarnura for their Saturn god, Ukratesim. And in Amora elaborates on this, it was Vemrav Chanan Bar Rava. He elaborated that Kalenda, this festival the Mishnah refers to of Kalenda, takes place over a period of Shmona Yomim Acher Tekufa. It is observed for 8 days after the winter solstice. And this other festival of Sitarnuna was observed Shmona Yomim Lifnei Tekufa, a period of 8 days before the winter solstice. We'll see more later about the origins of this festival. It actually had, you know, legitimate origins, but then it was later corrupted and turned into an idolatrous festival. But anyway, a simon is provided to help remember which festival is which, and the memory tool assumes that the reader will remember the order presented in the Mishnah. If we just remember the order of the Kalenda, then Sitarnuna, and we're, you know, confused maybe which one is before or after the winter solstice, V'simanech, we could remember it is recalling the pasuk in Tehillim, Kuf Lamites, which says, Achar v'kedem tzartani, after and before, later, earlier, you formed me. So we find in this pasuk that the term referring to later, a later stage, is mentioned first. And so too, regarding these pagan festivals in the Mishnah, the one mentioned first, i.e. Kalenda, is the one that's actually observed after the winter solstice, with Sitarnuna being the 8 day period before. The Gemara makes its point, which is, V'isak edaita chen v'edehen. If it were true that the 3 day period mentioned by our Mishnah includes the festival itself, well, now we've discovered these festivals that last for 8 days. And so our Mishnah statement that the rabbinic prohibition period related to the festival will last 3 days does not appear accurate. For we have these examples where actually Asara Havu, the period would last 10 days, 2 days before the 8 day festival plus the 8 day festival itself. Again, if the festival is part of the count, it's part of the figure three, well then, it would not be 3 days at all. In these examples, it would be 10 days. So it seems to prove that the 3 day figure was intended as, you know, counting the days before, separate and distinct from the festival. And so indeed, you know, no matter how long the festival itself is, the rabbinic period being referred to is only 3 days. Then it's consistent, it's true. However, the Gemara deflects this proof too by saying that could be Tana Kule Kalenda Chad Yuma Hu Chashivle. It's possible that the Tana is just saying like this. So basically, we have a three-day period, and that three-day period means 2 days plus the festival itself. And the Tana is not getting into, well, what about the different festivals? Some are longer, some are more than 1 day. The Tana is not concerned with that. He just wants to offer a basic, you know, measurement of the rabbinic prohibition. And so he says you have 2 days plus the festival. Oh, you have a festival that happens to be many days? That's considered for the Tana's purposes as 1 day. And so it's still possible that the three-day count includes the festival itself. The Gemara now tries another proof, this time from the language of our Mishnah, from the Mishnah itself that, you know, is the center of this discussion. The Gemara now focuses on the precise language used by our Mishnah, Amar Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi said, Toshma, come in here, the language of our Mishnah. How did our Mishnah express this period of the rabbinic prohibition? It said, Lifnei Eidein Shalov De Kochavim Shalov Shiyamim. Before the different pagan festivals of the idolaters for 3 days. Sravashi simply says, V'isak Daitach Hein V'Eidein. If the Tana was including the festival itself in this 3 day period, well then, he should have made that clear. Listen, he should have taught, Eidein Shalov De Kochavim Shalov Shiyamim. Tana should have simply said that the period of prohibition having to do with the pagan festivals lasts for a total of 3 days. And then it would be absolutely clear that the intention is 2 days before plus the festival itself. The fact that the Tana, you know, made things more ambiguous and you're lending certainly to the possibility that it means 3 days separate and distinct from the festival itself by saying, you know, Lifnei Eidein Shalov De Kochavim Shalov Shiyamim, this indicates that that indeed was the Tana's intention, that Tana is only including the days before the festival as part of the count, and so really it's 3 all days before plus the festival itself. Now Rav Ashi knows that you might object to this point, and so he addresses this. V'chi tema, hai diktani lifnei eidein. You might be thinking, you might say, 1 minute, how could we suggest you not to use the word lifnei before at all? Maybe it had to say lifnei before the festivals, lima'ute la'achrei day, to clarify that the prohibition begins before as opposed to after the festival. So maybe this is not an inference at all. But Rav Ashi says back to this, it's still, the Tana could have expressed this in a way that, you know, does make it clear, first of all, that it means before the festival, and at the same time, he is including the festival itself as part of the count. That is, listen, let the Tana teach, Eidam shalov de kochavim shloshi yamim lifneim. The rabbinic prohibition regarding the pagan festivals lasts for a total of 3 days lifneim. And Tana should add that it's before, it starts before the festival. But the point is, if it was expressed this way, then it would be very clear that the grand total of the rabbinic prohibition period is 3 days, that it includes the festival. But of course, it's not the way the Tana expressed it. The Tana, I taught it in a way that it certainly could be interpreted that it means that 3 days before the festival, separate and distinct from the festival. And therefore, based on this point, Rav Ashi says, Elishma mina, we learn from here, it must be that the Tana's intention is, Hein below Eidein, these 3 days aside from the festivals themselves. And so practically speaking, it means the prohibition lasts for 4 days, 3 days before, plus the festival itself. The Gemara says, Shema Mina. Indeed, it's clear based on Rav Ashi's inference that that is the Tana's intention. The Gemara now seeks to understand the exact reason for this whole enactment. Iboilehu, they asked, why did the Rabbanan say that commerce with pagan people is a problem, you know, leading up to their festivals? The Gemara says there are two possibilities as to the reason. Was it Mishum Harvacha? Perhaps the concern here was providing a material benefit to these pagan people right before their festival, which would cause them to go and praise their deity, since, you know, they're focused on their idols leading up to and certainly on the festival. So maybe if we do a deal with one of these pagan people, it's going to make them very happy, and it will be causing this person, this idolater, to go and praise his false deity. And this would be a prohibition on the part of the Jew who was involved in the business transaction, based on the pasuk of Hashem Elohim Achirim Lo Saskiru Lo Yishomal Picha. Names of other gods, of idols, of false gods shall not be mentioned through you, which prohibits a Jew from even causing an idolater to go and praise his idol. So maybe that's the rationale of the rabbinic enactment in our Mishnah. Gemara says, O Dilma, or perhaps the rabbinic enactment here was based on Mishum v'lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. the Torah prohibition, which says, before a blind person, do not place a stumbling block. Under this, a prohibition is the prohibition of causing another person to sin, even to cause a non-Jew to sin, an idolater to sin. For he too is bound by the prohibition against idolatry. So the Gemara says, perhaps the reason for the takana is that if, for example, a Jew were to sell a pagan an animal just before his pagan festival, well then the Jew is providing this pagan with the means. He's enabling him to sin by bringing the animal as a sacrifice in his idolatrous festival. So maybe that's what the takana is all about. Gemara clarifies, l'mai nafkamina, what practical difference would it make, you know, what the reason for the takana is? Gemara explains, would have a practical outcome in a case where, let's say, the islay behema l'didei. Let's say the case is where the Jew, who wants to sell an animal to a pagan, knows the pagan already has his own animal that he could use as an offering. And it's still close to his pagan festival. Whether or not this will be a problem, you know, prohibited by the takana, depends on the above. That is, if the basis of the enactment is, you know, don't do business transactions that could, you know, make the idolater happy, for that could cause him to go and, you know, praise his idol, well then, that is certainly still a problem here. The fact is, you know, this idolater is going to gain this animal. He, you know, very likely will feel like he got a very good deal here, and that could, you know, cause him to go and praise his idol. And so it would be lo yishamal picha, would be a problem of, you know, causing an idolater to go and praise an idol. So it would be prohibited. Whereas iyamart mishum b'lifnei iver lo sitein michshal, if on the other hand you go with the other reason, the rabbinic enactment was, you know, don't provide the idolater with something, with material that he could use to go and offer to his idol. Well, in this situation, that would not be a problem for ha'isei l'didei, because this idolater, he already has his own animal. So he already has the means to go and do the sin in question. Therefore, to go and provide him with another animal would not be a problem, for it's not true anymore that the Jew here is enabling the idolater to go and worship his idol. The Gemara questions this last point. Is this true that when the potential sinner in question already has the means to do the sin, the prohibition of don't put a stumbling block before a blind person and no longer applies, and you can, you know, do something that conceivably can aid him to sin, as long as it's not like actually enabling him to sin? Is that really true? But Tanya says in a braisam, Rabbi Nasan said, turning to Amid Beis, Minayin shelo yoshit adam kos shel yayin l'nazir, where do we know that it's prohibited, for example, to be yoshit, to extend, to pick up the cup of wine and extend it and give that over to a nazir? We know, of course, a nazir, his term of nazir means he's biblically prohibited from drinking wine. So it would be prohibited, for example, to provide a nazir with wine that he's going to use to violate his nazir's prohibition. Or, for example, v'yever min achai lebnei noach, it would be a prohibition of lifnei iver to provide even a non-Jew, ben noach, with a limb torn off a live animal, which of course is one of the commandments that applies to all of mankind, even to any of Ben Noach. So how do we know that it would be prohibited to go and provide him with that, provide him with this opportunity to sin? Talmud Lomar teach that these activities would be prohibited. The Torah says, V'lifnei iver lo sitein mechshal, do not place a stumbling block before a blind person. And so the Gemara points out, V'ha-hacha, here in these examples we have situations, D'chilo yavina le, even if this person doesn't actually hand over the prohibited item, it's not going to stop him from being able to sin. Meshakaliu, he'll simply pick it up himself and transgress. And yet, the Brice apparently is saying that if, you know, this first person is the one to pick it up and hand it over to the potential sinner, v'kaver mishim lifnei iver lo sitein michshal, he would be in violation of lifnei iver. So it seems against the premise of what we said above, that if it's known this idolater already has his own animal that he could use for his sacrifice, then the Jew could sell him a different animal. It seems from this braisa that it's not the way it works. However, the Gemara answers, Hacha v'maya skinan, here in the braisa, what are we dealing with? The kai betray v'nara, where the two people in question are standing on opposite sides of a river. And so the point is that the prohibited item is currently inaccessible to the nazir or the ben noach who wants to go and have that wine, or the torn off limb from the live animal, respectively. And it's only if this other person on the other side of the river stretches forth his hand and, you know, hands it over to the guy on the other side that'll be able to sin. That's why it's a violation of Lifnei Iver. But indeed, if the potential sinner in question could have anyways accessed that thing, it would not be a violation of Lifnei Iver, because it's no longer true that this person is enabling the other person to sin. And the Gemara now points out that Daikanami, close reading of the words of the Braisa, actually supports this interpretation. Deketani lo yoshit. The Gemara points out, the Braisa says, this Jew, this person may not extend his hand and pass that thing to the other person. Veloketani lo yitain. It doesn't just say he can't give it to the other person. This choice of language supports the reading that we're referring to a case where without the assistance of this Jew, the other person wouldn't be able to reach the item in question. Shema Amina, indeed, this is a clear inference. It supports this interpretation, and therefore, the Gemara's earlier premise that assuming that the whole problem here has to do with enabling this idolater to bring an idolatrous sacrifice, that if he has his own animal, therefore, that would be fine, because it's not lifnei iver, since you're not enabling him, we see that that premise is correct. And the Gemara leaves this issue here. It does not bring any clear resolution to the above question about the reason for the enactment. It appears that the consensus of the poskim is that the reason is arvacha, is the concern of that a Jew may not be the cause of someone to go and praise his idol. However, the whole enactment is not so relevant nowadays, because we don't have these pagan kind of people nowadays, generally speaking. The Gemara asks another question now, which is, Yibailo, they asked, Nasa v'nasan mai. What is the halacha, ex post facto? If a Jew violated the enactment, he went and did some business transaction with the pagan just before his festival. Now he has the proceeds, he has the money from this transaction. What is the status of that money? Did the Rabbanan go further and say that the money is forbidden for use? Or was the enactment strictly that, the act of doing business is prohibited, but if it was done, if it was violated, the Rabbanan did not go further and say that the money is prohibited too? Gemara brings a dispute about this. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Nasav and Nasan Asur. Rabbi Yochanan said that, indeed, the Rabbanan took the further step of prohibiting the proceeds from the business transaction with the pagan, whereas Reish Lakish Amar Nasav and Nasan Mutter. Lakish, however, said, no, the Rabbanan didn't say this. The money would be permitted. If it's already done, what's done is done, the money would be permitted. Eisvei Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan challenged the Reish Lakish from the following braisa. Says, Eidein Shalov Dekochavim, regarding the pagan festivals, Nasa V'Nasa Asurin. Somebody had a business dealing with them, sold them something, then Asurin, the proceeds from that business transaction would be prohibited. My love, Lifnei Eidein. Presumably, the braisa statement refers to the whole period, not just the festival itself, but even the days leading up to the festival in which the rabbinic prohibition applies. So the braisa seems to be pretty clearly saying that the proceeds too were made prohibited by the Rabbanan, which would be not like Reish Lakish. But Reish Lakish responds that lo. In fact, the braisa doesn't mean to even include the days before the pagan festivals, rather Eidein Dafka. When it says Eidein, it means Eidein, specifically only Eidein, meaning the festivals themselves. It is that regarding business transactions done on the festivals themselves, Reish Lakish says, I agree that that's a more severe kind of violation, and therefore the Rabbanan said that even the proceeds from the prohibition are now forbidden for use. However, as far as the days before the pagan festival, when the prohibition is not as severe, I say that the proceeds are not prohibited, and the Braisa would agree with me. The Braisa is not referring to the days before the pagan festival. The Gemara brings Ikad Yamar to those that say, a different version of how this conversation went. Eisvir Pshim Belakish Rabbi Yochanan. In this version, Pshim Belakish actually asked the question on Rabbi Yochanan from this Braisa, that again said, Eidein Shalov Dekochavim, regarding the festivals of the idolaters, Nasa V'Nasan, the rabbinic prohibition even says that even as far as after the fact, the person already did that business transaction, usur, the money from the transaction is prohibited. So Reish Lakish makes an inference from the Braisa's language. The Braisa mentions a dayan, their festivals. That's where this halacha is true. So a dayan in, if the business transaction happened on the festival itself, then yes, since that's a more severe kind of violation, therefore even the money is prohibited. Lifnei a dayan lo. However, the Braisa implies that if the person violated the rabbinic prohibition before the actual pagan festival, since that violation is not as severe, that situation, the money would not be prohibited, be a proof to my position, which Lakish says. Rabbi Yochanan responds, no. Tana, idi v'idi, a dayan karilei. Says, not a proof, even though the Tana use the word Eidayan, which technically it sounds like he's talking about the festival itself, but in fact, the Tana used that word in a loose sense. He meant that word to refer to the entire period that's related to the pagan festival, the whole three-day period where the prohibition applies. If a person violated the prohibition during that whole period, even the money would be prohibited. So according to this reading, the Braisa is saying like me. Gemara continues with Tanya, Kavusei the Rish Lakish, the following Braisa supports Rish Lakish's opinion. For it says, the Braisa, Kisha Amru, Asur, Laseis, Velaseis, Imahem. The Braisa first qualifies that when they, the Rabban in our Mishnah, stated that it's prohibited to conduct business with the pagans for 3 days before their festivals, Lo Asru, Ela B'davar HaMiskayim. They only stated that prohibition with regards to items that will last until the festival itself. For as Rashi explains, the real concern of the Rabbanan here was that the idolater is going to purchase this thing, let's say it's an animal or whatever he purchases, it lasts until the festival, and he'll feel that he has, you know, gained here, he has gotten a good deal. And specifically, he's going to see that thing on his idolatrous festival. He's going to get nachas from that. Feel very gratified that he got this good deal. And that will lead him to go and praise his idol. And so for anything like that that will last until the festival, the prohibition applies. Alva bidavar she'eino miskayim. But regarding perishables, vegetables, let's say, they're not going to last till the festival. Says the Braisa, lo, the Rabbanan never stated their prohibition for those things. So they could be sold to idolaters even within 3 days before the pagan festival. Now, certainly, if we go with the other possible reason for the enactment, that the whole issue is providing something that the idolater could use as a sacrifice for his idol, well, if it's not going to last until the festival where we expect he'll bring that sacrifice, then of course it's a non-issue. But then the Braisa continues, and this is the part that's relevant to the debate between Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. For now, the Braisa says, V'yafilu b'davar amiskayim, even if you are talking about a problematic item that will last until the festival, all the enactment said is that there's a prohibition to go, let's say, sell that item. However, Nasa v'Nasan, if it was done already, he already sold it to the idolater Mutter. The proceeds from that sale are permitted for use. So the Braisa very clearly says, like the opinion of Reish Lakish. Where presents another Braisa, Tani Rav Zvid b'Debeir of Oshia, Davar she'ein miskaye mochir lahem. Just as the previous Braisa stated, if you're talking about something that's not going to last until the festival, it's perishable, we'll use it up by then we could sell that to them. That's not a problem. Avol ein lokhin mehem. However, a Jew would not be allowed to purchase perishables from them, from idolaters, leading up to their pagan festival. Because, you know, here, the opposite. The idolater is very happy to get rid of his perishables. He's made a profit here. And so this would be part of the problem where this could lead him to go and praise his idol. The Jew caused this person to praise his idol, so this would be a problem. The Gemara brings a related story of Ahumina. It was once a heretic, a pagan, a person who served idols. The Shadr Le Dinara Ke Sarna Le Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah. He sent this freshly minted coin in the image of the Caesar as a gift to Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah B'yom Edom. He did so. It's a problem. He did it on the pagan festival itself. So this presented Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah with a dilemma. The Gemara tells us, HaViyasev Reish Lakish Kameh. Reish Lakish was present when this incident occurred, and Amar Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah started to deliberate, Hey Chiyavid, what am I going to do here? Eshkalei, if I go and accept the gift, Azulamode, then it's a problem. It could cause this Mina, this pagan, to go and thank his idol for the benefit of having a distinguished person, Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah, accept a gift from him. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah said, Lo Eshkale, if I don't accept this gift from him, Havile Eva, then this person might have Eva, he might feel a sense of hatred, enmity toward the Jewish people. And that is a consideration that potentially could waive the takana here, if it's going to lead to enmity, you know, potentially leading to danger for the Jewish people, then we might be able to set aside the concern. So I wonder what I should do in practice here. Amrlei Reish Lakish, Reish Lakish said to Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah, I have a solution which could certainly cover both bases. Tol uzerok osola bor bifanav. You accept this special coin, this gift from him, go and throw it into a pit. In front of him, make sure he sees that you threw it into the pit. Amr Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah said, how's that going to solve the problem? Kol shegin dehavilei eva. If anything, that'll make it worse. He'll have more enmity. He'll have more resent to me for throwing his gift in the garbage. I'll be insulted, be enraged if I do that. Reish Lakish explained, this is what I meant. Kilacher yad de kamina. What I'm suggesting is to kilacher yad, backhandedly, meaning like pretend as if you by mistake dropped it in, down the drain or in a pit. So this way, it will not be insulted. It will seem like it was an accident that you accidentally dropped it. But at the same time, he's not going to be particularly gratified that, oh, this distinguished person received my gift. He didn't receive the gift. And so it won't cause him to go and praise his idol. That was the solution that Rish Lakish suggested. The Mishnah mentioned various activities, various transactions that would be problematic in the days leading to the pagan festivals. The Mishnah said that it's a problem lehashilan velishol mehen, to either lend something to them or even to borrow things from them 3 days before the pagan festival. Both would be a problem. The Gemara wonders, bishlam lehashilan. We understand why it's a problem here to lend something to a pagan before his festival, the Kamar Vachlo. That clearly, provides a benefit to the idolater, which could then, cause him to go and praise his idol. Avol lishol me'en me'uti kamamaylo. But seemingly borrowing things from them should not be a problem. For the opposite, this is a diminishing their property, taking something from him, so he's not going to be, particularly glad at the transaction. And so what's the issue here? The Gemara gives one of two answers. Amar Abaye, Abaye said, even though there's no actual problem in this case, however, the Rabbanan decreed against doing all forms of borrowing, whether he's borrowing from you or you're borrowing from him. It is, the Rabbanan decreed, don't even borrow from them, lest they get confused with and you might lend something to a pagan just before his pagan festival. However, Rava says a different answer. He says, no, kula mishum da'azul lamodahu. All of the activities in the Mishnah, including the activity of borrowing things from them, from a pagan, before his pagan festival, all has to do with this concern that maybe that will cause him to go and praise his idol. What Rava means is that the feeling that gives this pagan, that this Jew depends on him, that he needed me, needed to borrow my thing, makes him feel good. And that too could lead him to go and praise his idol, and so this is included in the rabbinic decree. The Gemara goes through a similar discussion regarding the next pair of prohibited activities. The Mishnah said, Lehavosam velilvos mehen. It's prohibited to either lend a pagan money before his pagan festival, or to borrow from them. So again, similar question. Mishum lehavosam mishum de gemar v'chlu. We understand the problem where the Jew is lending this pagan money. He's received the benefit. He's gotten a loan, so that'll make him happy and go and praise his idol. Ela lilvos mehen amai. Why should it be an issue to borrow from them? He's giving away his money. This Jew, he's giving it a loan. So seemingly it's not going to make him glad. It's not going to be a problem that will cause him to praise his idol. So why is it included? The Gemara again answers. We have Abaye's answer, Rava's answer, Amar Abaye. Abaye says once again, Gzeira lilvos mehen otu lavosam. The Rabbanan decreed he can't even borrow money from them lest they get confused and you lend money to them near their pagan festivals. Whereas again, Rava Amar kulam mishum da'azul modehu. All cases, even the case of borrowing money from them, is a problem that might cause him to go and praise his idol for a similar reason to the above, that he feels empowered, he feels good, that the Jew depends on him, he needs his money, therefore this too is a problem. And a similar discussion regarding the next pair of Liforon v'Lifroa Mehen. It's an issue to either pay a debt back to them near the pagan festivals or to collect a payment for a debt that a pagan owed to a Jew. That Jew is not allowed to collect that payment near the pagan festival. So again, the question is, Bishlama Lefaron, clearly paying them back near the pagan festival is problematic, Mishum de Kumar Vechlu. The Jew then is benefiting this idolater, he's getting his money back. So he'll be happy to collect his money as his cash now, and that will cause him to praise his idol. Ella Lefaron Mehen, Muti Mimaitlu. But to collect from a pagan, why should that be a problem? The pagan is handing over his money. How's that going to make him happy? So why should that be a problem? So once again, Amar Abaye Gzeira Lifroa Mehen Otu Lifaron. The Rabbanan prohibited both forms, even to collect from them, lest the person get confused and think it's also permitted to pay back a loan near a pagan festival. Whereas Amar Rava says, no, you don't need to say that it's an extension, an additional decree, safeguard. Rather, Kula Mishum Dazal Modu, all cases are based on the same reason, that all of these activities could cause the idolater to go and praise his idol. Rava says, even when a Jew is collecting from a pagan, that could actually make the pagan happy, knowing that he has paid back his debt. So this too could cause him to go and praise his idol, and therefore it's included in the prohibition. The Mishnah had taught these four different categories of problematic transactions with pagans near their festivals. For one, there was regular business transactions of buying and selling. 2, it was lending or borrowing things. 3, lending or borrowing money. And 4, paying back a debt or collecting a debt. The Gemara now sets out to explain why the Mishnah had to mention these 4 different categories. Why couldn't we just mention, let's say, 1 and extrapolate the others from it? So the Gemara explains, Utsrichi, Mishnah needed to teach all 4 cases. For example, the Mishnah only taught that there's a prohibition to buy and sell with pagans close to their festivals. So I just said, okay, that's prohibited. Mishum de kamarvich luvi azil umode. For there, it's relatively straightforward. The pagan will feel that he gained from this business deal that will cause him to go and thank his idol and go and praise his idol. Avolishal mehen de meute kamamailu shabridami. If the Mishnah did not add that a Jew cannot be involved in the borrowing of an article of some utensil with the pagan year's festival, and in particular that a Jew is not even allowed to borrow an item from a pagan near the pagan festival, I might have said that that's permitted, because he's not going to be glad from that, because the opposite, he had to lend his item away. So I would have said that's fine. So Mishnah had to clarify, no, that too is included in the prohibition. And the Gemara continues, Vi'i tana lishol mehen. And if the Mishnah stopped there, with that a Jew cannot borrow an item from a pagan near the festival, Mishum nechashiva lemelsa. So I would have said, okay, fine. Mishnah is teaching us that even borrowing an item is a problem because it makes the pagan feel important, that the Jew had to borrow this thing from him. And so V'yazir Lamodi is going to go and praise his idol. So that case is a problem. Avo lilvos mehen. But if you're talking about the loan situation, specifically, and a Jew wants to borrow money from a pagan near the festival, I would have said that on this case, tzara ba'al mesle. This only causes the pagan grief. He doesn't feel happy at all at this. For Amar tuv lo hadri zuzi. For he's anxious that I'm never going to get my money back. So meaning lending an item. So okay, he has my specific item. I'll be able to simply, you know, get that item back. But if you're talking about a loan of money, so that's already can sometimes be more difficult to get the money back. So I would have said that's perfectly fine for a Jew to borrow money before the festival. And so the Mishnah teaches us that actually, no, even that is a problem. The Gemara continues, V'itana lilvos mehen. If the Mishnah stopped there, though, that a Jew can't borrow from a pagan near his festival, so I would have said, okay, that makes sense. Mishum dekamar bal karchem purana. The Mishnah is teaching us that apparently we have to at least be concerned that the pagan's attitude will be, I'm going to get my money back, I'll force him to pay me back. And so if he's able to push that, you know, worry out of his mind, well then, he will anyway right now feel glad at the thought that, oh, this Jew needed me, he needed to borrow my money. And so that could cause him to go and thank his idol. So in that case, it's a problem. Avol yipora mehen, but to collect the debt from a pagan near his festival, I would have said, well, since in that case, the su lo hadri zuzi, this is clearly a situation where the pagan will never see that money again. He's paying back a debt he owes. So he clearly has lost that money forever. Therefore, eimat sarisle. I might have said that this is purely a negative for the pagan. But he had to part with his money, so surely he's not going to go and thank his idol here, and therefore this case should be permitted, so I might have said. So the Mishnah clarifies that it's not true. Even collecting a debt back from a pagan is a problem because, you know, potentially he'll feel relief, feel glad that at least he paid back the debt, and he'll go and thank his idol for that. So even that case is a problem. Three chayins, we see why all these cases the Mishnah were necessary. The Mishnah presented the dissenting opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Yehuda argued that if you're talking about collecting a debt from a pagan, and surely the pagan only feels negatively about that he had to part with his money, and therefore this would not be a problem for a Jew to go and collect a debt near the pagan festival. That would be permitted, Rabbi Yehuda said. But the Chachamim replied to Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah that even if right now he might be a little bit unhappy to have to part with his money, ultimately, though, within, you know, a short period of time, the idolater will surely feel a sense of relief. He'll feel happy that at least he took care of the debt, and therefore this is a problem. This could lead him to go and thank his idol, and so it's not allowed. The Gemara wonders, does Rabbi Yehuda not agree with this argument of the Rabbanan, that we recognize that certain activities, you know, right now there might be some pain, but we factor in that later he might feel good about it? The Mishnah makes it seem that Rabbi Yehuda dismisses this argument, but the question is, Tanya says in a brisa that Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Isha lo sasud b'moed. A woman may not apply this kind of lime that was used to beautify the skin on chol ha'moed. Of course, the days in between the full Yom Tov days of Pesach and Sukkot, where the malacha restrictions are much relaxed. Rabbi Yehuda prohibits this particular type of makeup mipnei shenivel hula, because the truth is, she initially applies the lime. It's not a pleasant experience. It doesn't make her, you know, look good. But the benefit of applying this lime is only realized much later. So since, you know, for Chol HaMoed, it's not, you know, creating a net positive, therefore it's not permitted. However, the Braisa continues, Umode Reb Yehuda b'sid she'echola l'kaplo b'moed she'tufalta b'moed. If, however, the nature of this lime application is such that she will see the positive effects during the days of Chol HaMoed, while it's still, you know, part of the Moed, then Rabbi Yehuda would agree that we say, Afal pish mitzira achshav, even though now it's not pleasant, it's not an adorning thing, it's an unpleasant experience, but still it'll be permitted for simecha hi liachar zman, for eventually, while still Chol HaMoed, she will see the benefits of it. And so that factor makes it permitted. So the question is, this appears to contradict what Rabbi Yehuda said in our Mishnah, that apparently he disregards the fact that maybe later the idolater will feel glad. Rabbi Yehuda here apparently does not take that into account, so it seems like a contradiction. But the Gemara answers, Sum Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak hanech lehilchas moed. Set aside the laws of Chol HaMoed, that's a separate discussion. But the truth is, the kulu meitzer achshav simcha lachar zman. Practically all of the permitted malachos on Chol HaMoed fall under such a description, where initially, when you do the actual act, it's not, you know, pleasurable or beneficial, but since it will soon, as long as it's still during the festival, it will provide some benefit, then it's permitted. We can think of the different malachas, of baking or cooking or slaughtering an animal. All these things are permitted, even though, you know, while it's being done in the initial part of the process, it's not particularly beneficial or pleasurable, but still it's perfectly permitted because that's the whole criterion of Chol HaMoed. If it's going to be a net benefit during the Moed, then it's fine. As opposed to over here in our Mishnah, where of course we're talking about a totally different halacha. We're talking about, you know, what was the scope of the rabbinic decree against commerce with the pagans near the pagan festival. In the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, as long as the initial feeling that the transaction will engender in the pagan is not a good one, is a negative one, then it's fine. It was not included in the rabbinic enactment against doing that type of commerce with pagans near their festival. That's Rabbi Yehuda says, it's not a problem at all to collect a payment for a debt from a pagan near his festival. The Gemara presents a different approach. Ravina said, even if we assume that, you know, both halachas follow the same rule, we define things about the, you know, the final result, if later it will be a benefit, then that's called the net benefit. But says Ravina, here is Rabbi Yehuda's argument here in our Mishnah. Ovid kochavim le'inyan piron le'ol le'meitzar. In Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, it's simply not true. He simply denies the Rabbanan's claim that a later the idolater will feel good, that he paid off his debt. Rabbi Yehuda says, not true. For in general, the attitude of these pagans was that hopefully I'll get away with never having to pay back. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says this pagan will surely never feel good about being compelled to pay this Jew back. And hence, just since it's a purely a negative thing for the pagan, it's not a problem to do before his pagan festival. The Gemara now points out that Masnisin delo k'Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. Our Mishnah is not like the following Tana, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, the Tanya, who says in Ebraiser, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha omer, Shum Karcha says, the halacha here regarding, you know, collecting from pagans near their festivals depends on the nature of the loan. That is, milva b'shtar ein efrayin mehen. If the loan in question was recorded in a document, that cannot be collected from them. For in this case, Rabbi Shum Karcha agrees with the Rabbanan's argument that ultimately he'll feel glad that he took care of the debt, he released himself from the debt, and therefore it's a problem to, you know, give him that feeling by his pagan festival. He might go and praise his idol. However, says Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, milva al peh nifrayin mehen. If it was an orally conducted loan, it wasn't recorded in a document, then that may be collected even near the pagan festival, mipnei shehu kematzil miyadam. Because a loan with a pagan that wasn't recorded in a document, if the Jew gets lucky to be able to collect that, then he'd better do that as soon as he has the opportunity, is like saving his money from their hands. The point is that where there's no clear record where the Jew will be able to force a collection, the pagan's attitude is, I could probably get away with not paying it back. So like in this situation, Rabbi Shimon Karcha sides with Rabbi Yehuda's argument that he's not going to feel good at all if the Jew, you know, manages to corner him and get his money back about having to pay him back. But if it was recorded in a document where, since there's clear proof, the pagan will feel much less confident they'll be able to get away with not paying, therefore, in that situation, it would be a problem for a Jew to collect from him near his pagan festival because he'll feel relief. Okay, now I don't have to worry about paying this debt back, and I'll go and thank his idols. So in that case, Rabbi Shimon Karach agrees with the Rabbanan that a Jew would not be able to collect, in that case, near the pagan festival.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD-1. That's 855-275-7231.